Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's high noon on a Saturday. Thanks so much for joining us at Nation Radio. Very busy show this afternoon. We're going to discuss the Oilers' past, present, and future, plus the NHL's biggest stories this week. And there's lots going on. I had such a lot of information prepared, and then last night's game blew everything else out of the water. We're going to discuss mostly the third period of last night's game, believe it or not. It's amazing. Our guests today include, we got a great lineup. Jason Greger will be here at about 20 after Jason Greger's show right here on Team 1260. He'll help us tee up tonight's game and look back on last night's game and all the big stories. Dean Bélanger from Jets Nation will be here about 12:40 or so. Kent Wilson from Flames Nation at 1 o'clock. We'll have Thomas Drantz from Canucks Army and J.P. Nakota from Leafs Nation later on in hour number 2. Okay, Oilers won a big one last night against Columbus. Edmonton looked slow and disinterested until the third, and I understand Coach Rennie had a few words about winning between the second and third periods, and it paid off. The idea being, you know, if you're going to lose, lose trying to win. That was the early return on what he said, and man, did they go out and make a difference. Aleš Hemský came out flying in the third. He really made a statement with a big hit. I don't recall a more dominant period by 83 since, well, it's been a while. I was going to say 2006 spring, but he's had some amazing games, and that was an outstanding third period. Man, he looked like a man on a mission. Gene Principe tweeted today that, and this is a quote from Hemský, "I've been dealing with some things, and that's why I haven't been shooting. It's my shoulder. It's a little sore, but it is getting better." So, shoulders are going to be a topic of conversation with regard to Timo Hartikainen and others today, but that's the latest from Aleš Hemský. Ryan Jones scored a hat trick in the third period. The early goal in the third was huge, one of the biggest goals of the season. And remember, this is a very young team. He scored early in the third period and then two more times to get the hat trick. And it was funny because that goal, it seemed as though the Oilers had been lulled to sleep a little bit after the early power play goal by Eberle, by the Blue Jackets. But that game absolutely woke everyone up, and it was a fabulous third period. Ladislav Smead, did you see that goal? He should be called the Rifleman. What a shot. And his tweet last night after the game about Eberle finally going to the net and creating something? Classic stuff. Good for Ladislav Smead. I howled when I saw that. This young Oiler team is explosive. I mean, they can turn a game around in about 5 seconds. All kinds of firepower. Last night proved it. And as an Oiler fan, I tell you, the hardest thing is to be patient. I remember the old days, and we're talking about the boys on the bus. You know, they'd be down 4-0, and you'd be, and then you'd go to the washroom, it'd be 4-2. You got to be really careful with this team when you take your washroom breaks and your wobbly pop breaks, because they're going to be that kind of team all year long. We'll talk about tonight's lineup and any changes. I imagine Habib Bulin will be in, but we'll get to that. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is the rookie of the month again, and at this point, I think it would take a huge break by somebody else, another rookie in the National Hockey League, for anybody to change the alter the Calder course, because it looks like the Edmonton Oilers may have the first ever Calder Trophy winner. Don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but that's a possibility as we roll through the next few months. RNH looks outstanding. Oklahoma City kept on rolling last night to a 1-0 victory. I don't know when the Oilers are going to need another forward, but there are some good things happening on the farm with some of the older guys like Keller and certainly Josh Green, who had a little bit of injury problems, but is looking good as well. And then these young guys as well. Bad news on the Timo Hartikainen front. We knew he had a shoulder injury. Word today that he's gone for the season. And we'll get confirmation on that. We'll probably have Jim Byers on the show next Saturday. But bad news for the young Finn. Timo Hartikainen likely gone for the season. Now, after tonight's game, the Oilers don't play again until Wednesday, and then they play 5 games in the next 15 nights after this evening. So enjoy tonight, and then they got like I think it's through till Wednesday of this week they don't play again, and then the following week it's through till Thursday. So going to be a few nights off, so that means Christmas shopping time for me. I don't know about you. And you know, the stories kept coming this week, and what I found yesterday afternoon online when I got home was amazing. I don't know if you've heard about this or not, but in what has to be one of the most interesting stories ever, Brian Burke admitted that he planned to rent a barn for a fist fight with Kevin Lowe, True story. It's the clip online. You can check it out. Are you serious? He was apparently serious enough for Gary Bettman to get involved. He called both GMs to tell him to cut it out. And now I have Irish blood in me, so I understand the concept. But man, that seems out there. And for the record, anyone who saw Kevin Lowe play would probably put their money on Vish if it ever got to that. But Kevin Lowe did tell Terry Jones, the story's in the Sun today, that the two are all good now, and we thank goodness for that. Okay, it's 12:06. We got a very busy show. I want to start with something that came to our attention later on this week as well, but it's coming up for you. And I'm joined by Guy Boissier from the Rexall. Guy, are you there?
I sure am.
Okay. I wanted to talk a little bit about the event tomorrow. Let me just give a little bit of a background here. It's tomorrow. Ryan Jones on hand to sign a limited edition This Is Oil Country Edmonton Oilers team calendar, correct?
That is correct, yeah.
Okay, and proceeds for the sale go, they're $5.99, and they will benefit local charities. And tell me a little bit about, you can meet Ryan, obviously get his autograph. What else is going on tomorrow?
Yeah, tomorrow at our new Rexall on 163rd and 95th Avenue, we've got the Octane coming out. They'll be there from 12 till 2. And then we've got Ryan signing autographs from 1 till 2. And he's in our limited edition calendar. He's our September guy. We're looking forward to having a bunch of people come out, getting to sign some autographs and meet some of our customers and fans.
Okay, and what time is the event?
It's at 1:00 on Sunday.
Okay,
tomorrow.
And Rexall does a lot of work with the partners as well, and this is just one of them that goes throughout the year, correct?
That's right. We have a Rexall Foundation, and the calendar is in conjunction with our Rexall Foundation, the NHLPA Goals and Dreams, and the Edmonton Oilers Community Foundation. So it's the three groups benefit from the sale of this calendar.
Okay. And I think a lot of, because Oilers are such a massive part of Edmonton, and the team obviously gets a lot of attention, but sometimes the background work, the charity work and the good deeds that are done, are a little bit left behind. So we wanted to talk about that a little bit. The Edmonton Oilers Community Foundation was created in a decade ago, right?
Yeah, in 2003 it was created. That's right.
Okay. And it's basically to give back to the community and the fans.
That's right. And, It's really focused towards health for kids. For example, last year we supported the Stollery Children's Hospital Camp Warwa for kids who underwent heart transplants. And so part of the proceeds from the calendar went towards, making sure that they had some fun out there at the camp.
Okay. And Guy, we know that Edmontonians are very generous. So if they want more information than we're able to provide right now, if they wanted to go online, where could they go?
Yeah, if they want to go online and check out some more information, they would go to rexallfoundation.ca,
okay.
And there's just a ton of information on there.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks so much. Let's just give one more hit to the event. It's tomorrow, and it's at the new Rexall. Where is it again?
That's right. It's tomorrow at the new Rexall at Westgate. It's on 163rd Street and 95th Avenue. We've got the Octane from 12 till 2, and we've got Ryan signing autographs from 1 till 2.
Guy, thanks so much. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and for everyone that buys a calendar, we're also going to have a draw for a signed autographed Ryan Jones jersey. So
perfect.
Good opportunity there.
I guess that hat trick was pretty timely, hey?
It was perfect.
Guy, thanks for this. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Okay. That's a Guy from Rexall Foundation, and they do great work, and often, you hear through the grapevine things that the Oilers organizations have done, and often because, as I mentioned, the Oilers are such a big item as a team, some of this stuff gets left in the background a little bit. So just to repeat, tomorrow, Ryan Jones on hand to sign a limited edition This Is Oil Country Edmonton Oilers team calendar. Proceeds from the sale of the calendars, which is $5.99, will benefit local charities. In addition, Ryan will having a sign a great stocking stuffer, a signed Oiler jersey will be raffled off. And so check it out tomorrow. And that's once again 163rd and 95th. Okay, so wanted to pass that along, and we do thank Guy for being a part of our show today. As I mentioned, a very busy show. We're going to be talking to Jason Greger in just a few minutes about the Oilers last night, the Oilers tonight. Lots going on with the other Canadian teams. James Reimer starting, that's the word we're getting. He's going to be starting tonight in net for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And we got lots of questions. And if you want to email us, you can do that as well at nationradio@theteam1260.com. You can drop by your questions for any of our guests today. You can do that by by, well, lots of places. Lowtide underscore Twitter at It's Nation Radio on Twitter. Also at either the Lowtide blog or the Oilers Nation blog. You can do that today as well. Also, we're going to have Dean Belanger on from the Jets Nation. We're going to talk about the Jets and maybe a little bit about Randy Carlyle, too, in that conversation. Kent Wilson from the Flames. I'm going to try to talk him into trading Jay Bouwmeester for a can of corn and a third round pick. We'll see how that works. Thomas Drantz from Canucks Army going to talk about the Canucks and how well they're doing. And JP Nakoda from Leafs Nation. We'll have him on before 2 o'clock this afternoon. Very busy show. It's all coming up. We're going to take a break right now and we'll be back right after this. This is Nation Radio brought to you by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 1216. This is Nation Radio. We're around until 2 o'clock today. It's definitely feels like hockey season right now. A little bit of snow going on. Still, the temperature is ridiculous. Love this winter. If we could have this kind of winter every year, I would really appreciate it. As I get older, I really appreciate the lack of really cold weather. If we could arrange that, I would love it very much. And there's a couple things I wanted to get to that happened on the Oilers Nation blog in the last couple of days that I thought were very cool. So we're going to talk about something that Jason Greger wrote and also Robin Brownlee wrote. They wrote two different articles about Alex Hemsky on the 2nd of December, which is, what, yesterday? Something like that. And they both were really looking at, you know, what do you do with a guy who has all world skill and is not really performing at a level where if you decide to trade him, you're going to get the kind of full value you want for a veteran like that. And then the other thing, you know, are you going to keep this guy? Because right now, what's the contract range you'd be looking at? Obviously, Alex Hemsky isn't going to want to sign for a discount. But if you're the Oilers, this is a gentleman who's had injuries, talking about the shoulder. Gene Principe tweeted not long ago that he's had some difficulties, although it's coming along. And this is an issue that's been an issue for a long time for the Oilers and Alex Hemsky's shoulder situation and injury situation. So both articles, I encourage you to read them online. They're right at Oilers Nation. They really, not necessarily called into question, but talked about a sense of urgency for Alex Hemsky and maybe that you know, something had to happen, had to go out and do something good. Well, he did. And it took to the third period. And, you know, I thought he played very well. He big hit, obviously helped in, chipped in on the offense and played really well. And that's the kind of guy that Alex Hemsky can be. Now every night, that's a bit much, but he does seem to be finding some chemistry now with Horkoff and Sam Gagne on left wing. And I thought it was very interesting because sometimes, you know, impatience and that sort of thing with players, and we all do it. But when you're dealing as an organization in a contract, I mean, I love Alex Hemsky. I think he's a wonderful hockey player. Honestly, what kind of a contract would you sign him to? You don't want to mortgage the future because you've got Hall and Nugent Hopkins and Eberle and others coming up, and those, that's your core group. How much are you willing to spend on Alex Hemsky? You know, $5 million? I don't know. Good question. We'll talk to Jason about that in just a couple of minutes. And then Ryan Jones went out and scored 3 goals in the third period, too. And I had, over a period of, like, I would suggest a year or so, gained the reputation of being, you know, somewhat down on Ryan Jones as a player. Not really true. I just think that as a role in the top six, that was expecting a little much. However, that was based on statistics that we'd seen and advanced stats we'd seen in the previous year. This year, Ryan Jones is playing, I don't know if people realize it, out of sight, and not just in the goal scoring department, but he's got a Corsi Rel, if you're familiar with what Corsi is and Corsi Rel is, a plus 2.8, and that's with a zone start of 38% offense. So basically, he's starting uphill, he's starting in his own zone for his zone start. Behind the net, Gabe Desjardins' great sight tells us that he's playing with, you know, average or below average line mates overall. Now, obviously, he was playing with the big line there for a while, but there's been situations where he's playing with the third, fourth line guys, and he's obviously posting not just goals, but he's posting well offensively, and with that Corsi Rel, the puck's going in the right direction. So, you know, aside from the fact that most people's projections about Ryan Jones offensively have been off this year, there's also the fact that he's really playing well. He's helping out. It's obvious if you watch him on the ice. I think that he talked to Robin Brownlee. Robin mentions in one of his articles, in fact, it's the one that says Ryan Jones go with the flow, that he did work very hard defensively and improving himself over the summer and as he entered into full year two with the Edmonton Oilers. And it's very obvious. This is a guy who's gone out and done the hard work, and it's paid off, and he's playing very, very well. And almost no matter how you project it, there's always luck involved in line mates and that. But this is a guy who's been a godsend for the Edmonton Oilers, who, quite frankly, have had, you know, high level performances from some players and some of the wingers that might have been expected to score more. You know, we might include Magnus Pajärvi in that, not to pick on him, but that's a player. Sam Gagner, who's playing the wing, has had a little bit of a difficult time. So there's a little bit of that going on with some of the wingers, and Ryan Jones has really picked up the slack. So I thought that was interesting that over on Oilers Nation the last couple of days, a few articles have been not only just bang on, but really kind of anticipating that third period last night, and it was a wild third period. A lot of stories coming out of that in the newspaper today and on radio today. Ladislav Smeed's big goal now, and he's a big-time player. And really the third period, one of the things that didn't get discussed, I thought was somewhat important, is that Dubnyk survived that game. You know, he shot, I think it was 36 out of 39 shots that he stopped, but he played well. Some juicy rebounds, but you'd expect that because as a guy who's playing, you know, he's a little bit rusty right now. He doesn't play as much. He's in a kind of a, definitely a backup rotation. And really, he's been playing, when the Oilers play two nights in a row, he's playing the first or the second game. But other than that, Tom Rennie is, you know, running with the veteran, and why not? Hobby Bullen's playing well. But I think as we move forward that it might be an idea to get Devan Dubnyk into a few more games based on his play last night, because I think that he had a, at least from my point of view, I think he had a little bit of a rough night going on with some of the rebounds. We also talked about Ryan Whitney as well, and his play backed off a little bit as far as time on ice is concerned. I think a lot of that has to do with the very, very good power play, but it was some kind of night for Whitney and the entire gang, and certainly the stars of the show were Ryan Jones and some secondary scoring from some other folks too, and Ladislav Smeed with that big howitzer from the blue line that found Twine, and now he's got two goals this year already, and we're not even at the 30-game mark. It's 12:22, and we welcome from Team 1260 Radio Afternoon Drive Guy from the Jason Gregor Show. Jason, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. That was some kind of third period last night.
Well, it was, yeah. The Edmonton Oilers, probably the most energetic they played in a while. You do wonder if Columbus, a little bit fatigued, maybe having played in Calgary and went to overtime the previous night. But, you know, full marks for the Oilers, and I think the key will be tonight ensuring that they're not like Columbus was last night and fatigued in the third when they take on Calgary.
Yeah, I noticed that it seemed to me, though, that Coach Rennie was running the fourth line a lot during the game, certainly in the first two periods last night. Maybe that was in an effort to make sure that he had some fresh troops tonight as well.
Well, you look at you know, Nugent Hopkins and Eberle that have really carried this team, I think, in the first 25 games. You know, the best part was that, you know, they didn't have to rely on them in the third period. And I think that was the key. Eventually, if this team's ever going to stay in the hunt, you needed Alex Hemsky to expect a hat trick from him. I think that's his first ever multi-goal game of his career, never mind a hat trick.
But, yeah.
You know, it was that was key for the Oilers. And, you know, Ryan Jones now 9 goals in the season. And it's funny. I had a lot of debates with people, you know, some guys who believe in certain statistics. I love stats. I believe in a lot of them. But there's certain ones where you start accounting for that you're going to rip a guy based on his line mates. I'm sorry. I don't buy into that whatsoever. And, you know, Ryan Jones, granted, he's well ahead of the pace. But this is a guy who in his 3 years, granted, didn't play 2 full seasons in his first 2 years. But he's a guy who's averaged around, 15 to 18 goals if you prorate it over a season. And I'm not surprised he's had production. I'm surprised he's on pace for whatever it is, 28 goals. I don't think that's going to happen. But, you know, Jones's game is very simple. He's not a flashy guy, but he goes to the tough areas. And most goal scorers nowadays, unless you're Sidney Crosby or Ovechkins or, you know, Corey Perry, or Eberle or Nugent Hopkins, most of your goals have to be garbage goals.
Well, and the thing about the goals last night, that first goal, the first one in the third period for him that tied it, that was a huge goal for the Oilers because they looked like they'd come out with some energy, but once that goal was scored, you really kind of felt like, you know, it was only a matter of time, right?
Well, to me, Ryan Jones is probably, kind of a bargain of a Ryan Smith is how I look at his style of game, you know, excluding all the hair jokes and everything like that. You know, you look at his game, it's somewhat similar. He's not as good as Ryan Smith as far as deflecting pucks in front of the net and is great on the wall. But, you know, that move last night that he scored in that first goal where he gets the puck and a very quick, hard wraparound that doesn't allow the goaltender, you know, that's a vintage Ryan Smith goal. It's, you know, if Jones can be that guy for the Oilers, it's an ugly goal scorer. I'll tell you, he'll take a guy who can score you ugly 20 to 23 goals every year.
For sure. You wrote, and we talked about this before you came on with us today, Jason. You wrote about Alex Hemsky yesterday afternoon and about the fact that, you know, this is a guy who needs to show well. He's in a contract year, and you're not going to get full price for him if you trade him. And yet, how on earth can you sign the guy to a big contract based on injury and performance? He really played well in the third period.
Well, the thing that impressed me the most, actually, about Hemsky last night was, you know, sure, he got that late goal, but, you know, the thing that he showed more energy and effort. And, you know, we had debated that he just looked like his body language is either lacking in confidence or more so just lacking in the drive necessary to score in the NHL level. It's not, you can't just win on skill. And, you know, Hemsky delivered some big hits last night, which is really not what you expect from Alex Hemsky. And I've never questioned his fear factor, right? Mm-hmm. That's probably caused him to get injured at times. He goes into tough areas. He never backs down from anybody. But we hadn't seen that yet this year. And last night, you know, great for him to get a goal, and I'm sure that helps his confidence. But I just liked his battle level last night. It was a lot higher than I'd seen. The other thing was he was shooting a lot more. Now, he did pass up a glorious chance in the second period that he didn't shoot, and you're thinking, oh, here we go. But after that, he was firing on all cylinders. I think it finally clicked that he's like, because I watched when he came off the bench, Tom Rennie leaned down to him and, you know, didn't say anything, but I think he just politely said, Alex, shoot the puck.
Yeah.
And after that, you know, we saw him taking some slap shots. And it's not about scoring. It's just about you start releasing those pucks, and then eventually you'll get a lucky one that squirts through the goaltender, you know, like Ryan Jones seems to get a lot of the time. And that builds your confidence.
You know, Gene Principe tweeted today, I quote from Hemsky after the game last night, saying that he'd been dealing with some things and hadn't been shooting because of his shoulder being a little sore, but was getting better. That leads me into my next question, Jason. If you're thinking about a contract for this guy moving forward, and you're the Edmonton Oilers, what kind of range would you even start at? I mean, you can't sign him for less than he's making because he's a valuable player. But with his injury risk, where's the happy medium contract rise with Alex Hemsky?
Well, I guess it's a good question. Technically, you could, after July 1st, if you wanted to sign him and he becomes an unrestricted free agent, you don't have to offer him 10%, right?
So, right.
And they could go to him and say, we'll sign you to a five-year deal at a cap hit of 3.4, for instance, and, you know, away you go. But, you know, I think Alex Hemsky's probably someone who's a two- or three-year contract right now, both for him and for the team. Because even when that contract's done, he'd still only be 30 years of age, right? So he could still have a big contract afterwards because, you know, and I had mentioned it in my article. I thought Hemsky was maybe a little bit hesitant, and I would understand why. When you've been off and on the IR as often as he has, and I think he's probably rushed back and not played at 100%, you know, and I think it's, you know, the NHL, the philosophy, it started with the concussions, Alan, but I honestly believe we're finally shedding a little bit of the machoism from players and even from the organization to think, oh, this guy's 70%, he can play, right?
Yeah.
Like playoffs, sure, guys will take cortisone shots, they'll do whatever it takes, and I understand. But in the regular season, when you have guys coming back and, you know, 10 days can make a big extra difference in strength and mental toughness and how confident you feel. And I honestly believe they're starting to do that. And Hemsky, I think, while he waited long, he came back, he still probably played a little hesitant. And last night, to me, once he delivers that first hit and then comes off and doesn't feel anything, then he all of a sudden feels better.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we saw from him. There's a lot of the mental part of the game that none of us, you know, anybody can really put we can't do a statistical data on it. We can't even do if you're from the, well, I saw camp. It all depends on which side you look at it.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing that can ever put a value on how their mental state is and how physically healthy they are. You don't really know because the NHL is the worst league for being protective of bumps and bruises. It's ridiculous.
Well, it's funny you mention that because this week one of the great gritty Oiler wingers, Mike Greer, retired, and one of my longest serving memories of him is popping his shoulder out on a hit and then going back to the bench and getting it popped back in, and then he'd never miss a shift.
Yeah, that was kind of old school times, right?
Yeah.
And, there was a lot of guys who did that, but Greer, he was so muscle bound that it didn't pop back in easily. I had a guy I played hockey with in junior, Rob Bernstad, and he used to do that on the bench, I remember. And, for 30 seconds, it kind of turned white, and the assistant coach would pop it back in. He'd wait 3 or 4 minutes and go back and play. And you're kind of like, what the hell? But after a while, he'd say, well, it pops out, but once it's back in, then it feels fine, right? So
yeah.
It is a different thing now. There's way more money at stake, and some guys have a higher pain threshold than others. You're never gonna gauge that. Jason Smith had it, Kevin Lowe had it, Mike Greer has it. Ryan Smith, I think, at times has definitely shown that he's a guy who will play through a lot of pain. And some guys just have a higher pain threshold than others.
Yeah. Before we get off last night's game, I just want to talk about Laddie Smead a little bit. Now, his goal is getting all kinds of attention, and he's tweeting out some brilliant stuff. But this is a guy who maybe took a little while to mature as a player, but he is as steady as a rock back there on the Oilers blue line now.
Well, it's interesting. I mentioned it when he scored that goal. I said, if Ladislav Schmid is going to legitimately become a top four defenseman, you've got to expect 5 goals a year at least. You can't be, a top four defenseman playing 20-some minutes a night every game and scoring 1 goal every 2 years, right? Like,
right.
And it's funny. I talked to Schmid about it. He finally admitted that, for the last few years in his career, because when you're drafted 9th overall, and you have aspirations of coming into the NHL, he said, I want to be a puck-moving defenseman. And I think he really fought with the fact that not everybody can come to the NHL and be a puck-moving defenseman. It's hard, right?
Mm-hmm.
But
yep.
The funny thing is, now that he's accepted, I'm going to be a solid, steady, stay-at-home defenseman, that's normally when the offense starts to come a little bit, right? And Schmid does have it in his repertoire because that's the type of defenseman he was before he got to the NHL. And I think now you'll probably see him, chip in with, 4 or 5 goals a year. I'm not expecting him to ever reach double digits because he's never on the power play. And, it's hard for a defenseman to score that many even-strength goals in the course of the year. But if you're playing that often, you need that from Ladislav Schmid. And he gets a little more confidence. It's amazing what confidence will do for a player, even in the defensive end, how that translates to the offensive end.
Yeah, Jason Smith used to put up 20, 25 points a year, too. You're right. That's a good point.
Yeah, like you have to have that. When you're a 20-minute-a-night defenseman, you can't just be one-dimensional, right? Like the one-dimensional offensive defenseman, Marc-Andre Bergeron, score you 40-some points, right? So mm-hmm. you've got to find a balance. And I think with Schmid now, it's amazing because there's a lot of people that, oh, he's a bust, he's a write-off. It's a tough position to learn. It's a tough position to play. It's taken Tom Gilbert this long to become, a lot more consistent. Nobody even talked about it. Tom Gilbert, Jason Smith, the Nashville Predator at the Oilers blue line the other day, I almost fell out of the press box, right? he's adding different elements to his game, and a lot of that just comes from guys have confidence. They start to feel a little bit stronger, a little bit more confident in their ability, and all of a sudden they do things that you probably wouldn't expect just because they feel more confident in doing a lot of different elements.
Speaking with Jason Gregor from Jason Gregor's show right here on Team 1260, 2 to 6 every weekday afternoon. This is Nation Radio. Jason, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, a lot of talk about him over the last couple of weeks and comparing him to all rookies since Yzerman, basically. In style, it's hard to stay away from Gretzky comparisons just because there's a lot of similarities in size and how they see the ice and the passing. In performance, he's on track to be one of the best rookies over the last 35 years. Did anyone, and I'm trying to find someone, I didn't, did anybody think he'd have this kind of impact that you can recall before training camp?
No. There's nobody who thought that he was going to be a point-a-game player. No one in their right mind. There were some people who thought, okay, 55 points was likely. I do find it interesting. There was a lot of guys who then crunch numbers, and which is great. But he's never going to score at the NHL level because he wasn't a scorer in Red. And I constantly told people, I said, look at who he played with in Red Deer. He scored 106 points with nobodies. I'm sorry, I don't care if they were 19-year-old WHLers. They were guys who weren't remotely talented. You look at the numbers Sam Gagner or Taylor Hall or other guys who score 100 points, and look at their line mates and teammates and other guys. He had none of that in Red Deer whatsoever.
Yeah.
And he put up ridiculous numbers, and Jordan Eberle has some of the sweetest hands we've seen in Edmonton, in a long, long time. And, you know, Nugent Hopkins, how we see, like, that pass on the power play last night was ridiculous. And, you know, Eberle's finish, it's right upstairs. He doesn't shoot to put it on net. He shoots to score. And, you know, that's going to be a lethal combination. And, you know, you factor in Taylor Hall when he gets back in. And, you know, I think even in a few years when a guy like Magnus Pjärvi maybe finds his game and matures a little bit at the NHL level, that you know, Nugent Hopkins, you surround him with other elite players, man, it makes him even better. But just, you know, him himself, it's been a revelation. Yeah, no one in their right mind. No one thought Patrick Kane would score 72 points coming out of junior. And last I checked, Kane and Crosby were the only two 18-year-old rookies in the last 25 years to get over, I think it's 62 yeah. points or 63, because Jeff Skinner did it last year. So
I think you're right.
If he gets over 70 points, Al, he puts himself in very elite category. And I asked Ryan Whitney yesterday, because he is a rookie with when Crosby was a rookie, and now he's here with Nugent Hopkins, and asked him to compare. He said their vision's identical, but they're completely different games.
Yeah.
Crosby was quick and powerful. He says Nugent Hopkins is much more cerebral, sees the ice. And Ben Eager said that Nugent Hopkins better as a rookie than Patrick Kane was.
Wow. You know, the thing about Ryan Nugent Hopkins that slays me is that he is brilliant on the power play. The power play for rookies is usually death. Even the good ones, they don't perform at a high level. This kid is, you know, he's driving the bus. Hemsky's secondary, Gagner's secondary, they're all secondary. This guy is making butter passes at 18.
It's scary to think what he'll be like in a few years. But you know what? He's got confidence. He got off to a good start, I think, which was key. And that confidence element, none of us can equate to it. And it's like that way in everyday life. You know what? If you're a young single guy and you got some confidence, you can talk to any girl in the bar. Right. And if you get shut down all the time, eventually you lose your confidence. It's no different than on the ice. And it's just how it works. And, you know, the one thing is his vision, his ability. The thing that impresses me the most about Nugent Hopkins is you watch him when he stick handles the puck, how he moves 2 to 4 inches. And that gives him that extra half second. Right. Yeah. He pulls the puck into himself. The defender lunges. Now the defender can't get him. He's got an extra half second. Boom. Makes that perfect pass through the seam. And that to me is the most impressive part of his game. The other thing is, how many of his goals have been right around the crease?
Yeah.
He's not scared to go to the areas to score goals.
No,
that's
sure.
What impresses me as well. I mean, it's been impossible not to be impressed by the guy, and he's clearly heads above any other rookie right now in the NHL, even though Adam Henrique had a pretty good month. He had 14 points for the New Jersey Devils, but it's every element of his game. Like that spinorama goal that led to Jordan Eberle when he spun off the defender off the wall, Eberle scores, and then that pass last night. And the best news for the Oilers was Nugent Hopkins and Eberle didn't have to do anything in the third period, and they scored 5 goals.
I just always go back to that Sutton pass. When guys like Sutton are passing the puck like everybody's going. It's all rolling now.
Yeah.
You know?
And, you know, Andy Sutton's another guy who has come in here, and well, he's been light years better than Curtis Foster.
Yeah,
right?
For
like,
sure.
Just in the toughness element. Just in the locker room, how he jokes around with the guys. I watch how he interacts with everyone. He's a really friendly guy. And, you know, he's tough, of course. You know, I think even though he got suspended, you know, rolling out after Gabriel Landeskog is something the Oilers haven't had in a while. And I think, you know, Theo Pekka will learn a lot from Andy Sutton, because while Sutton doesn't have the best foot speed, he's got very quick feet, and that's why he's always been a pretty good open ice hitter. And Peckham's got similar traits, as does Colton Tubert.
Before we let you go, Jason, one last one on the Brian Burke, Kevin Lowe barn-raising item. I would pick Vish in that fight. How do you feel about Brian Burke against Kevin Lowe?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting about that scenario, right? Because I think, you know, while it's funny, I don't really understand what Brian Burke, I think sometimes he just can't help himself, because I'm not sure how a lot of people know the fact that, you know, his son had asked him, you know what, Dad, you got to get rid of having these grudges. You know, you got to be a better human being. When his son passed away, very quickly, that's why he said, you know what? And that's why he called to mend the fence with Kevin Lowe. And I don't think he's trying to reopen that by any stretch, but I'm really not understanding why you would bring it up now. Because the other thing I do know is, well, he said, it's interesting, if you listen to his clip, he said, well, you know what? How Kevin Lowe called me out in a fight on radio. That's not how you do it. You call the guy and set a time. Well, guess what? He never called Kevin Lowe. He said he called Glenn Sather. So he's kind of ripping on Lowe for saying, well, he called me out on the radio. Well, what did Brian Burke do? He went to his butt. Hey, tell your friend I want to fight him. You knew his number. If you really wanted to meet him at the barn, why didn't you go out and do it? I think it'd be more exciting to have a Joe Cap Moscow, Brian Burke, Kevin Lowe tag team match, right? Now, that you'd probably have to put Lowe and Moscow together because Burke and Moscow probably similar body size types, and then Cap and Kevin Lowe. But everybody saw what Joe Cap did to Angelo Moscow.
Yeah.
I would probably take Kevin Lowe similar to doing the same thing to Brian Burke if I had to pick. It's obviously a great hypothetical. You know, I don't think they'd ever do it, but I watched Kevin Lowe play. And, well, he wasn't the best fighter, per se.
Yeah.
When you're in a street, the thing about Kevin Lowe was they called him Sid Vicious because he was cheap and he was dirty when he played.
Mm-hmm.
When you fight guys, I don't think Kevin Lowe would get in the ring and be all, if this is a barn fight, and I've seen a few, to be honest, being in a farm guy, I've seen a few bush party fights. If guys square up man to man, it's not like there's a lot of rules here. You just fight to win. And if you got to kick the guy in the junk, whatever you got to do to win, then you win. And so something would tell me I would take Kevin Lowe in that aspect.
Well, I think Mosca hands the cane to Lowe, and it's all over in about 3 minutes.
I'm not sure if you're a big CFL guy, but I love the CFL.
Oh, me too.
That just adds to the folklore. I love that thing. That tape will be showed for a long time. And, you know, there is a rivalry that you don't really see anymore.
No.
And that's why I hope Gary Bettman, not to get off topic here, when they go to realignment, I hope we go back to four divisions of hockey and you name the four divisions. I don't care what you want to name it, Lemieux, Gretzky, Orr, Richard. I don't care. Have four of them so we can see some repeat year after year. Why did Edmonton and Dallas hate each other? Because they played every year in the playoffs.
Oh, man. It was brutal.
Could you imagine if Oilers fans, and most of them, if you're under the age of 25, you've never really experienced the Battle of Alberta, ever.
No, that's true. You're right. You know, it's like I still hate Mike Keane, and I understand he's a nice guy, but I can't like him because of the Dallas-Edmonton rivalry over those years.
Oh, well, you know what? To me, I go back when I was a real diehard Oilers fan, and in the 80s, like, you go down, like, Jim, you have respect for those guys, but, man, like, you couldn't stand Theron Fleury. Like, Oilers fans hate him. Like, even when Marty McSorley lost his marbles and speared Mike Bullard, Oilers fans were like, yeah, well, Bullard deserved it. You know, like, you convinced yourself that he deserved it somehow. That's what was great about it.
Jason, thanks for this, man.
Anytime, Al.
Oh, hey, by the way, are you on TV tomorrow?
Yeah, I will be there at 9:15 with Shane Jones. Should be a lot of fun.
All right. Thanks, Jason.
Okay.
Jason Greger from the Jason Greger Show, 2 to 6 every weekday right here on Team 1260. And, of course, he's got a little Sunday TV gig, too, in which he does very well. Very insightful guy and interesting stuff. And we covered a lot of territory there, and we thank him very much for that. Now, it's 1242. Coming up, we've got Dean Bélanger from Jets Nation. We're going to talk, go around the Canucks and Leafs and what they've got going on as well in the next half hour. So please stay tuned. This is Nation Radio presented by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 1247. This is Nation Radio. We're now joined by Dean Bélanger from Jets Nation. Dean, how are you enjoying this beautiful weather today?
Fantastic. How are you?
Yeah, very, very good. Now, are you... let's start with Kyle Wellwood, okay? He keeps defying the odds, and I was reading on Gabe Desjardins' site the other day about the fact that you know, he really is, you know, trending well, and no matter what else happens, a Kane coming along and that sort of thing, when he's playing this well, you just got to keep him in the lineup, right? He's playing that is so well, you can't bring him out or move him down the depth chart.
Kyle Wellwood has been probably from game one to now their most consistent forward. And the ultimate compliment is they've moved him up and down each line, I think, to get other players going. It's been him and Nick Antropov, another big surprise, who've been consistent from game one on. He's been great, and he's pacing right now for a career high in points.
You know, and he, the thing about Wellwood is he's always been kind of a slick guy, and you know, there was, you know, speed concerns, inconsistency, you know, concerns, sort of like the poor man's Mike Comrie kind of thing. But he, the last year and a half, it seems like he's found his way and found a way to stay in the lineup.
Yeah, you know, he was, I did a little research on him. I'd forgotten that he was a fifth round pick, and you know as well as I do, fifth, sixth, seventh round picks have to work harder. First, second, third round picks, they just get more opportunities. Kyle Wellwood, in his second full year as a Leaf, was almost a point-a-game player. His game fell apart the next year, and poof, he was gone. You know, memory gets a little bit sketchy as we get later on in life, so I did a little looking. I thought, honestly, he was blown out by Burke when Burke came in and did the whole truculence thing, but he was actually gone just before that in that horrible, horrible period where they just had misdirection and everything else. So he went from being a pointy game center to, having a pretty tough year, and boom, he was blown out, and lo and behold, Vancouver signs him as a UFA, and then he ends up in Russia, and then he's signed by St. Louis. He's on waivers. It's just been a nightmare. So I think he's been pretty happy with Winnipeg. I think they've been happy with him. I'm sure come the new year they'll start looking at doing a new deal for him.
You know, looking at the Jets and the standings, they're tied for 12th, but they're really like a couple of points out of a playoff spot, and that's where you want to be, you know, in the mix there for the playoff opportunity as the year goes on. You don't want to slide down like maybe the Islanders have and Carolina. What's the key improvement over last year's Thrashers to this year's Jets?
I don't honestly know if there's been one. And if you look at it, December 1st of last year, Atlanta was in seventh place. They were playing very good hockey, and they had a +6 goal differential. Too far after that, the wheels fell off. They fell down. They ended up being a 12th place team last year with a -46 goal differential, which is just a huge swing. Right now, they're 13th place, pretty similar to where they were last year. They're -9 on a goal differential right now, put them on pace for about a -30. So I think there's some trending arrows there. But really, by the numbers, they kind of are where they are and where they were last year. Now, on the positive side of things, yes, they're only 2 points out of a playoff spot in a very, very, very jumbled up East right now. 7 right down through 13 is tight. And they've done it without two of their top four defensemen in Hainsey. I guess you could argue maybe he's a fifth, but let's say Hainsey the way he was playing before he went out, and Tobias Enstrom. So you get those two players back, you're probably looking pretty good. And yeah, I think everyone has to be, you know, happy with where they are. They've got to make some hay at home here. They got a very, very good schedule as far as a lot of home games, and they need to take advantage.
Evander Kane is a guy who's scoring well now. He's on track for 40 goals if he keeps, you know, doing what he's been doing lately. That's a heck of a season. What's the story with his hot streak? Did they move him up a line, or what happened to ignite this?
Well, what happened was the Noel blender struck very well for him. He's been playing with Little lately. Little has been lights out the last couple of weeks. But you know what? It's just one of those things. Kane's shots are going in. He's a streaky player. He will always be a streaky player. He's the only one-shot scorer I see on that team, and right now they're going in. We know he'll have a dry spell, but I agree with you. I think somewhere right now he's going to be between a 30- and 40-goal season, which is a great improvement. He's going in the straight line, and he reminds me so much of a young Jerome McGinley. He doesn't really drop the gloves, but he gets his nose in there. He's not afraid. He's a shift disturber when he needs to be. I really, really like this kid. I think you're going to see he's going to become a superstar.
Well, I think he's the best young forward on that team, and that's saying something because that Russian kid's very good, and Little's good too. So
I might put my money on Burmistrov in the long run, mm-hmm. But two different players. It's actually, you know what? It's a lot like a Keith Tkachuk playing with a Zhamnov.
Right. And so what you're telling me is both will end up being traded.
Well, Tkachuk actually stayed with that organization for quite a long time.
Yeah, you're right, he did. Okay, I talked to Scott Taylor last week, and we got into a conversation about Dustin Byfuglien, and he stated, despite Byfuglien wanting to be, play defense, he stated he wants to stay on the blue line, that in Scott's estimation, the roster sets up very well for Byfuglien to be the big power forward on the right side. Do you agree with that?
Yes, that is a fair statement, and short-term, it's probably the right answer. I still think they need to see this through, and there's a few reasons for that. He's 26 years old. It takes NHL defensemen forever, hello, Mr. Smead in Edmonton, to develop. He's, 260 pounds. Is that the fair weight to throw around? He is a load. When he leans on people, they go down. He scored 20 goals last year. He led NHL defensemen. He's already got 5 this year. I think the perception out there right now is he's not playing very well. And he's got the same amount of points as Mr. Wellwood does.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's playing well, but he's got to – they got to rein in the riverboat gambler a little bit. And I think part of that might be he played a lot with Enstrom, and Enstrom's out. So I think you're probably seeing him and Bogosian maybe playing a little bit too much, or maybe in different roles that probably they shouldn't be at this point in time. But, you know, the biggest reason why I don't think you transition them yet, one – if he wants to play there, then respect that and see it through the end. And two is Charlie Huddy. If Charlie Huddy can't make a defenseman out of this guy, then nobody can.
That's a good point, yeah.
So, I would let it go. I was the most exciting thing that happened in this offseason from a player personnel aspect for me was the hiring of Huddy. I thought that was the most exciting thing they did. I looked at their roster. I looked at all the good young defensemen. I thought this is going to make hay for them in the long run.
You know, I was looking at the standings, and it you know, maybe I'm dreaming here, but if you look at the Eastern Conference with Montreal, Winnipeg, and Toronto's, you know, up there, but you know, they're a team that could slide back into that 7-8. What would it mean for Winnipeg if the Jets are in a race with Montreal and Toronto for eighth in the Eastern Conference and end up, you know, beating the other two out and making the playoffs? That'd be a massive story.
That would be probably euphoria. That would what the Blue Bombers did this year, and yes, we're still hurting a little bit from that, to go from worst to the Grey Cup, worst to first, get to the Grey Cup, that's an amazing accomplishment. A little easier to do in the CFL. If the Jets came back this year, a team that was, you know, perennially terrible as far as playoffs are concerned in Atlanta, to come in the first year with little to no roster improvements and take that and ride that out to the playoffs would be insane. I think if you asked every Jet fan at the beginning of the year, does this team need to make the playoffs for you to be happy? Pretty much everyone would say no. The ride has been pretty fun. The home games are great. The fans are into it. They're beyond amazing. And I really think that would be the cherry on top. So, yeah, it'd be pretty special, but really it's been special already.
Yeah. Hey, Dean, thanks for this, man.
Hey, no problem. Thank you.
All right, Dean Bélanger from Jets Nation. You can read his stuff there. And interesting insight there. Bufflin's an interesting character because, I mean, I he's a load on the right wing, but he's also, you know, a major talent on the blue line. And I just think of the, you know, already the number of goals that he scored from the blue line on the point. You know, that might be where he's most valuable. So Winnipeg Jets fans have a lot to look forward to this in over the next few seasons. There's a lot of talent there. Now, coming up in hour number two, we've got a few things going on. We'll talk to Kent Wilson at the top of the hour about the big Battle of Alberta tonight. Also, Thomas Drance from Canucks Army and JP Nakoda from Leafs Nation. So stay tuned. This is Nation Radio, presented by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
A couple minutes after 1 o'clock, we're here until 2 o'clock today. Jungle Jim Hunter on at 2 this afternoon with edition number 2 of this show. So stay tuned for that. You can reach us at Nation Radio at theteam1260.com. Plus, we're on Twitter at It's Nation Radio. Also, Low Tide _ on Twitter as well. Our focus, Oilers past, present, and future, plus the NHL's biggest stories every week. And lots going on. Of course, Battle of Alberta. We'll preview that with Kent Wilson here in a couple of minutes. By the way, on After Hours tonight, it's Andy Sutton and Tom Rennie with Scott Oak, who is a national treasure. I love Scott Oak because questions that no one else will ask, he just asks casually. He's a very interesting guy, very good interview, and I always look forward to the show. By the way, tomorrow, we talked about this last hour, but I want to talk about it right now. Ryan Jones is going to be hand-assigned a limited edition This is Oil Country Edmonton Oilers team calendar. Proceeds from the sale of the calendar, which are $5.99, benefit local charities. In addition to meeting Ryan and having him sign a stocking stuffer, a signed Oiler jersey will also be raffled off, and that's at Rexall, 163rd Street and 96th Avenue in the Westgate neighborhood in Edmonton. That's 163rd 93rd and 96th. And, of course, you can get the calendar at any Rexall drugstore. So check that out. And that's part of your weekend as well, getting Ryan Jones' autograph. Very cool. Oilers won a big one last night against Columbus. Played really one period, but, boy, they played well in the third, ending up winning 6-3. Outstanding. Whatever Coach Rennie said between the second and third period, it worked. They had an outstanding third period. Hopefully they can continue that for tonight's game. Joined now by Kent Wilson from Flames Nation and other parts on the internet. Kent, how are you, man?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Now, last week we talked, and I think we both agreed that Blake Como was going to be a really good pickup. Was that an understatement? Did he really play as well as he looked for most of the time I saw him on my television?
I don't know if it was an understatement, but it seems pretty accurate at this point. His line had a very good game last contest. They definitely controlled play. They had a lot of chances, and he got his first 2 points of the season. So far, so good.
Now, this question comes in from Cameron, and I want to address it right off the top because it's the one thing that we Oiler fans are thinking about. Given, and this is from Cameron, given Aginla's statement that he doesn't want to be traded and management not wanting to deal him, how many more bloggers in their underwear media conferences will Jay Feaster do this season?
I'm hoping none, but you never know. I mean, the funniest thing about that comment is that none of the rumors came from bloggers, as far as I know.
I don't think they did, right?
No, it was from Eric Francis and a couple other mainstream reporters, so I don't know why he decided to take aim at bloggers.
But, well, you know, it's funny because it's that old school thing, right? You know,
yeah.
Let's you know, a bag of cheesies and one light bulb in the basement, yeah. And you're gaunch, and that's a blogger. It's funny because I found it interesting because most rumors like that, you know, that's not really what bloggers do for the most part.
No, I mean, the only blogger that does that is Eklund, right?
Yeah.
And he's a big name in the blogger world, and maybe that's why bloggers are synonymous with rumor mongers. But yeah, most bloggers that I read and know of don't really traffic in rumors. They might discuss them and speculate on them, but that's all.
Here's a question that I had, and I don't want this to be inflammatory, but I was thinking about this week with the Flames, you know, playing about the same level as the Oilers are win-loss-wise and just kind of trudging along. Is Jay Feaster maybe getting stubborn at the exact wrong time? And by that I mean, if you're losing, and we'll talk about it in a minute, but if you're losing your best defenseman or arguably your best defenseman and things are going a little sideways, maybe, is that the wrong time to say, I will absolutely not, you know, offload, and then, you know, Nile Yakubov ends up being a Flame, and that's okay. Is this the wrong time for him to get stubborn about wins and losses?
I honestly don't know how much we can take from Feaster's what he says publicly. He's a GM, and he's also a lawyer, and he knows that he can't come out into the media and say, yeah, I have plans to trade people, and I really want to. He's been very guarded. Since he's come here. Now, he's been a lot more congenial than Daryl Sutter with the media, but he's been no less guarded. So I don't know how much stock I personally put in the I'm not never going to trade again la talk. To me, that's, to tell you the truth, Daryl Sutter said, I'm never going to trade Dion Phaneuf for a very long time, and then he traded Dion Phaneuf. So
yeah.
I'll believe Feaster when, you know, again, actually does stick around for the next 2 years. But up until then, I think it's just talk.
The guy that I'm interested in knowing how you feel about and whether or not you feel they might offload him is Bo Meester.
Mm.
How has he played? Has he, you know, and I mean, let's take the contract out of it because, you know, every team has a contract that maybe looks a little, you know, unusual. But let's just take the value of the player for now. Has he played well enough to be a part of the future? And if not, or even if he has, do you think that's a player that they might look at trading if the value coming back is enough?
Bo Meester's actually been very strong this year, even better than last year, just in terms of his defensive play. I think he topped 28 minutes the other night. He plays consistently against the other team's best players. He plays in all situations. And his partner is Chris Butler right now. And, I mean, no offense to Chris Butler, but he's not exactly the ideal player you'd have playing shutdown minutes most nights. So, I mean, the problem with Bo Meester is he's not getting the points that you'd want from a $6.5 million contract, and I don't think he ever will in Calgary. He just doesn't have that kind of offense. And he's not a flashy player. He doesn't hit people a lot. He's not standing up guys at the blue line and knocking them down. And, I mean, it really depends on what his perception is outside of the market, too, if they want a return. And to be honest, I don't think for what you could get for him right now would be worth trading him. If that makes sense.
Well, and the other side of that is from a Bollmeister point of view, with Giordano going down with ruptured tendons,
yeah.
You know, this is a guy they're going to rely on even more, right?
Yeah, it's the Flames' top four is getting really thin at this point. And if you take out Bollmeister, I don't know what's really left there.
Still in all, I look at this team, and maybe it's because, you know, I've just seen them do this before, where they look like they're teetering on the edge, and they're about to, you know, you're about to say down goes Frazier, and then suddenly they somehow get back up off the mat, and they're you know, Ginla's scoring from everywhere again, and we've talked about this before, but do they have, and now we talked about defensemen here with Giordano going down,
yep.
And they're going to look at some guys. I know that there's a kid, I think, from LA or Anaheim that they had signed to an AHL deal, and they're going to look at him a little bit. Do you think they have the wherewithal to, if Aginla and Kiprasov and these other veterans come to, you know, just turn it around, is there enough there to get all the way to a playoff spot?
It's funny because we actually called them the Zombie Flames last year after December when they started going on their run, and they were basically the undead. They just would refuse to go down. So maybe it will happen again this year. I think the team is marginally worse than they were in terms of true talent last season, although it's Kiprasov's having a much better season. I expect Aginla to go on some sort of run coming up. He plays a lot. He gets a lot of power play time, and his percentages are a little off right now. So at some point, he's going to start scoring. I honestly think if the dice started landing on sevens for them, they might make the playoffs. That said, if they do, they'll be an eighth seed, and I think they'll get swept out of the first round anyway.
Right,
yeah.
But you can't discount these veteran talents, right? Like the entering tonight's game, the Otters are 7 points ahead, but the Flames have two games in hand.
Yeah.
So you know they win tonight, and it's 5 points with two games in hand, and that's not tied, but you know you can see it from there. And the Oilers are a team that you know, as of this morning, they're tied for seventh overall because it's so tight. Calgary looks like they're, you know, a distance away, but it can close so quickly. And the gap can close quickly. They haven't done it in the last 10, but they're not a terrible road team. And as you say, the goaltending is there.
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of see that there's, even now, there's the script could be written that they jump past at least a few teams here.
Yeah, and Brent Sutter seems to be figuring out what he has this year. He really struggled with matchups to start the season. Didn't really know what to do in terms of matching up who with who. He's got Aginla with Glenn Cross and Jokinen now. And the other lines, they're doing okay, and the other lines are starting to hit it out of the park, too. The one we talked about, of course, Blake Como, he played with Michael Backlund, who was out to start the season. And that really looks like a pretty strong third line. You're never going to win the Stanley Cup with a strong third line, but...
No.
Maybe you'll get some points in the standings.
Now, if we're matching up tonight's game, goaltending wise, two veterans going, obviously Kiprasov and Habib Boulin tonight. Kiprasov is, I always hesitate to underrate him, so I would say that it's a saw off with a slight edge to the Flames because Kiprasov has not been as effective as he was in the first, say, 12 to 15 games of his season.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree with that slight edge to the Flames there?
I would, it's goaltending is incredibly hard to predict. I mean, who would have thought that Habib Boulin would be one of the best goaltenders through the first, 6 to 8 weeks of the year this year after being pretty much the worst starter in the league for the last year or two. So, and as for Kiprasov, I mean, he was a replacement-level goaltender last year in terms of his save percentage, but he's got a .930 even strength right now, which is, if he hangs on, is going to be, I think, his best mark in 5 or 6 years. So right now I'd say the Flames should have the edge, but in a single game, you never know.
Yeah, it's true. And defensively, I think that Giordano, just on the basis of trying to figure it out, now they've played since then, and I thought what I saw against Columbus, obviously late, wasn't good, but they played pretty well there.
Yeah, they actually mostly dominated Columbus except for about 5 minutes in the first period and 5 minutes in the third period, and that was enough for Columbus to tie it up and get the win in the shootout. One guy Edmonton fans may want to watch tonight is a guy we've actually talked about before, is TJ Brody. He's been called up this year, and he's really playing very well. Now he's sort of second, third pairing, but and he's not very big. He's not going to knock anyone over, but he's great with the puck, and he's very creative in the offensive zone, and he's been a bit of a revelation for us recently.
Final question, then I'm going to let you go, but I wanted to talk to you about this because, and I wanted to be sensitive about it because it's never fun or funny, but Corey Sarich, who's a veteran guy who maybe isn't getting the role that you know, he had felt was apropos, has officially requested a trade. Tell us a little bit about how that happened, how it came about, and whether you think it's likely he'll get dealt to someone.
Well, today he and his agent are coming out and saying they did not officially request the trade, which is the typical dance you get with this type of stuff. Let's just assume that he has gone to management and asked for a trade. It wouldn't surprise me. He's been a healthy scratch most of the season. The last couple of years, I mean, when he was originally signed by Sutter, he was supposed to be Robin Regier's partner in the top shutdown pairing. That's never really come about. He struggled with that the first couple seasons. After the lockout, he wasn't quite as effective. And he has real mobility issues, and he has chronic injury issues, which also slow him down. So the organization isn't a big Corey Sarge fan at this point. And he can't be more than a third-pairing defender. And even then, he's somewhat of a detriment just because he can't keep up with the play anymore.
Okay, well, we'll look forward to the game. What have you got coming up on Flames Nation here in the next week or so?
Well, today I get to write the game day post on Oilers Nation. that was at the behest of our boss, so that's going to be interesting. We're going to have a live chat going between both sites tonight.
Oh, cool.
So people should show up and have their tough boots on. And
well, I promise to drop by and be wildly inappropriate. How's that?
Well, you won't be the only one, I'm sure.
All right. Hey, Kent, thanks for this.
Sounds good.
All right. Kent Wilson from Flames Nation, and a little bit of a preview of the Battle of Alberta. Interesting with Giordano going down, and you know, you talked about some of the options, and you know, a one-off game, you never know, but long-term, that Calgary Flames team, I never trust them because they always look dead, and then they as he said, the zombie Flames, they show up, and you know, they're all of a sudden pushing for a playoff spot. We'll see if that happens this year, you know, and you know, you don't want to. Obviously, we don't want to count on that, but it's Calgary Flames. They are always pointed in the direction of trying to win now, and I, you know, you have to respect that. An organization like the Oilers, who did the rebuild and are now coming up, they're at a different level, obviously, and still ahead of the Calgary Flames. But part of the growth of a team like the Oilers is being able to put down and put in place and finish off a veteran group like the Flames. So I think tonight is going to be a very interesting game for these young Oilers, so we'll look forward to that. Coming up, we've got a couple of folks, Thomas Drance from Canucks Army, and we'll also talk to J.P. Nicole of Leafs Nation before 2 o'clock. This is Nation Radio, presented by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
This is Nation Radio. We're previewing several games, including the Battle of Alberta, Hockey Night in Canada, Game 3 tonight, and Calgary in Edmonton to play the Oilers. Big game. Game number 1 starts in a few minutes, Montreal and Los Angeles. Hockey Night in Canada, years and years ago when I was a kid, like maybe like 73 or something like that, they did at least one late game where it was from the Forum, and it was Montreal Canadiens against the Los Angeles Kings in L.A. Funny what you remember. Juhal Vitting is the guy I remember from that era. But anyway, enough rambling from me about the past. We're joined by Thomas Drance from Canucks Army. How are you, buddy?
I'm well. How are you doing, Alan?
Good. Now, I was gonna say congratulations to the BC Lions and their fans, but do young people in Vancouver even know the CFL exists?
You know, I think they do. Based on my Twitter followers, they're pretty into it. I'm going to be honest. I'm the biggest bandwagon fan in the history of the world when it comes to the BC Lions. I didn't watch a single minute of their season until the second half of the Super Bowl, at which point I proceeded to gloat. Especially when I got to work on Monday, we have a big Winnipeg contingent, and they're a lot more into the Blue Bombers than I am into the Lions, but, you know, I still held it over their heads, so.
I can tell you're not that big a fan because you just called it the Super Bowl, but I won't even go there.
Oh, no.
But anyway, to any, young BC Lions fans listening in, congratulations because, you know, it was a heck of an effort after an 0-5 start for the BC Lions. Okay, let's start.
Nice to see a Lou do well in a championship game.
Yeah, so. And I was a little concerned there because I thought maybe in the fourth quarter they'd bring out Luongo to quarterback or something and it would turn badly. But anyway, speaking of which, let's start with Bobby Lou. Now, there's no way you trust a Stanley Cup run to a young goalie like Schneider, and I think the idea of even trading or thinking about trading Luongo is just terrible. But
yes.
What is going on here? How are the Canucks handling it, and what do they do if he doesn't get any better?
Well, you know, I think he will get better. We're talking about, he's got the third best save percentage since they started recording the stat in 1983. So, you know, I don't think you just go and become a 900 goaltender after you've been, you know, a roughly 920 save percentage goalie for the last decade. And, you know, he's still relatively young in terms of, you know, goalie years. Obviously, we've got guys like Rolison and Tim Thomas who seem to be playing in wheelchairs and playing quite well. So, you know, I don't think he's lost it. I think he just had a slow start to the season. He was coming on pretty well before he got hurt in the game against the New York Islanders a couple weeks back. He had a 925 save percentage in November. He always starts slow in October. And I really think that the hand-wringing over his performance is rather overblown. What I think it comes down to is the people in Vancouver don't like Luongo. They really don't like him. And, you know, his performance in championship games or elimination games gets a lot of the attention, but his habit of saying sort of odd comments to the press, and I think it's somewhat exacerbated by the fact that he was captain for a while, and that was an awkward situation in which, you know, he'd have to call his team out for their performances, but that seems weird because he's not a skater, and, you know, there was a tension there that I don't think fit well and certainly didn't make him look good in the eyes of, you know, public perception. And I think that's what it comes down to. I think people, the majority of fans, and this doesn't include me, but, you know, from a Canucks fan perspective, the general average fan, Corey Schneider is this fresh new guy who everyone's, you know, he's played really well in his first 50 games, and everyone's tired of Luongo personally and you know, his perceived habit of choking. So I think it's an irrationality on the part of Canucks fans, but they just want this shiny new toy, mm-hmm. and they want to run with that. And in terms of what Alain Vigneault is doing and how he's handling it, I think with the run that Schneider was on up until the first period of Thursday night's game against Nashville, he just rode the hot hand. You know, other guys weren't able to get into the lineup either. Mason Raymond still hasn't made his debut. Aaron Rome, who, you know, was on a tear scoring-wise, he couldn't get back in the lineup even once he was healthy because Vigneault was just sticking with the winning lineup that he'd used through that five-game win streak they were on, you know, this month. And I think I think the goalie controversy thing's a little bit overblown, and I think it's overblown because fans don't like Luongo personally, and also, you know, because Vigneault's going with the hot hand and going with the hot hand of a backup over their highly paid goaltender is just a fun story for the media to generate hits with. I think within the dressing room, there's probably not much of a controversy, and I would be very surprised if Luongo doesn't get the start on Sunday night against the relatively hapless Calgary Flames.
Well, now Luongo is 32 in real years, but as you say, in goalie years, you have to cut him in half and count the rings to know exactly how old he is. But the thing that about Luongo that I always wonder about, and I agree with you. I think that you know, Canucks fans are the thing about the Canucks is it's always been too much credit to the goalie, like Brodeur or McLean, or mm-hmm. too much blame to the goalie, and that's, you know, the part of the interesting part about Canucks fans on the coast. But I keep expecting him to, the coach, Vigneault, to say, look, he's our starter now. He's going to start the next 10 games or three of the next five, and we're going to go with him. And that hasn't happened yet. Is this something that the Canucks aren't seriously thinking about trading Luongo or trying to trade him, right?
Well, you know, I don't know that he's tradable. with his contract. I think in a few years he will become tradable because his salary will be like $2 million, but his cap hit will be 5.3. I think that becomes appealing eventually to cap floor teams, but depending on what happens with the CBA, lots of people are talking about, you know, with the NBA working out their new collective bargaining agreement, there's this amnesty clause. Teams are basically able to get out of a contract each. Lots of people think that the Canucks won't move either goaltender until the next CBA is signed, just
okay.
in case they have an amnesty option. And, you know, from a money puck perspective, Schneider's the guy you go with because overpaying for goaltending is silly. And, you know, that's sort of a school of thought I subscribe to. But I still think Luongo's a really, really good goaltender, no matter how you slice it. In terms of quality starts or in terms of his save percentage, you know, he's been one of the best goalies in the NHL, definitely top five over the last post-lockout and probably a little bit before that too. You know, I think one thing when we talk about Vancouver fans and their perception of goaltending, you know, we don't know what we're talking about in general. You know, we're talking about a city that spent 5 years torn, you know, totally polarized as to whether or not Dan Kluche, a career 889 goaltender, could lead a team to the finals, right? There were huge pockets of Canucks fans who thought Dan Kluche was really, really a great NHL goalie. I mean, that happened. So, you know, there were people who were hugely up on him and hugely down on Luongo, and it just proves that when it comes to goaltenders, Canucks fans are really in the dark, and maybe that's because we've had no good goalies in our franchise's history until Luongo. But yeah, I think it's weird. The Vigneault's sort of, you know, on Tuesday he started Schneider for his sixth game, and also said Luongo's still our number one. And then on Thursday before the Nashville game, he was talking about having a 1A and a 1B, sort of backed off his you know, firmer statement from earlier that week. So, you know, I do think there's some indecision, but I really do think Luongo's still the guy they expect to be starting come April, and I really do think that Schneider's string of starts was mostly the result of his hot hand, and I think looking into it more deeply or trying to see whether or not this is a longer-term trend, I you know, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think either guy gets traded this season, and I think it'll be sorted out in the offseason. I think Schneider's a great insurance policy, and I think it's really a luxury to have two goaltenders of that caliber. But, you know, trading Luongo, I mean, Schneider hasn't even faced 2,000 shots in his career. I mean, how much do we really know about him? Obviously, he's got great pedigree. Obviously, he's had a very impressive start to his NHL career. But, you know, with goaltenders, I don't think you can really evaluate how good a guy is until they've had 2,000 shots against in their career. He's at, you know, 1,250. So, you know, I think it's definitely too early to give up on Lou or to go with Schneider, and my guess is that the team rides with both of them, playing reasonably even amount of starts, at least through the season, and whenever one of them gets hot, they'll go with that guy more.
I've been, one of the general managers that I observe and really respect is Gillis, because I think he makes moves only when he has to make moves to improve the team in a way that will improve the team, not just for today, but for the future. And David Booth would be, to me anyway, the latest example. A guy who, no matter what, you're still buying low, even with the contract. He seems to be coming around a little bit. And let me ask you this. If Luongo straightens out and the Luongo Schneider tandem ends up, you know, playing right through this spring, everybody else is healthy. Looking at the roster, I still don't think, even with the way they performed, I don't think they really need that much to add at the deadline. They seem pretty deep in the right spots, and their high skill guys are still playing really well. Is that a correct assessment?
Yeah, I think it's pretty close. I think they need a depth defenseman who can play the right side. Obviously, you look at the team and it's like, oh, they go eight deep on defense, and that's true, but it's not really, because it's like an LSAT logic game looking at their defenders, because so many of their guys, Ballard, Hamhuis, and Alex Edler, they've tried Alex Edler on the right side some this year, but it's been, you know, kind of a disaster. So when Salo goes down, and that's inevitable, right? That's something that we just expect to happen at some point. When Salo goes down, they're really lost on the right side. So I think they need a depth right side defenseman, mostly as a, you know, an injury insurance policy. And, you know, I don't think that costs more than about a fourth round pick at the deadline. And I'd like to see them add some size to their bottom six. Their fourth line has been really, really good. Dale Weiss, LaPierre, and Volpatti, you know, they're more than the sum of their parts, largely because Maxim LaPierre is so good, has been so good this year, which is a great surprise to us in Vancouver. But, you know, I think their third line on Thursday night's game against Nashville was Hodgson, Hansen, and Malhotra. And when Raymond comes back, people think he'll slot in there. Yeah, it's not a very big third line. And I think they'll need to add, you know, a bruiser type to their bottom six and a depth defenseman who can play the right side. But, you know, I think those are very minor tweaks. So largely I'd agree with you, but I think there's a couple minor changes that I would be very surprised if Gillis doesn't address before playoff time.
What about Kessler? Is he coming around now? Is he playing a little bit better, establishing himself a little more physically?
You know, that second line with Higgins, Kessler, and Booth has been the Canucks' best at even strength. We obviously count chances over a Canucks army, and by chance differential, Kessler's been the best Canuck this season. So I think a lot of the stories of his struggles are overblown. Mm-hmm. I think that he'll come around. In fact, I think he's already playing really, really well. I think he's already the best Canucks forward at even strength. When you look at the chance data, the bigger concern to me, by far, way more than Kessler's lack of production so far, is that the Sedins are not playing very well at even strength. And, you know, it's gotten to a point where I really worry about their two-way play 5-on-5. It's been subpar this year. And they're going to put up points. They get that crazy treatment where they start 70% of their shifts in the offensive zone. And they're obviously phenomenal on the power play. But when it comes to 5-on-5 hockey, teams with the right personnel can dominate them, can really pin them in their own end for long stretches. A recent example would be in the Sharks game last week, a week today. They played, and the Sharks matched up Pavelski, Vlasic, and Burns against the Sedins. And, you know, those are three good players, solid defensive guys, all are fast and physical. And they really were able to do what we've seen happen to the Sedins before when they're matched up against guys like Boland, Seabrook, and Keith, or with Boston when they were matched up against Bergeron, Chara. You know, if you have an elite defenseman or a really good defensive pairing and a great defensive center, you can pin the Sedins in their own end 5-on-5. And that's happened a little bit too frequently this season for my liking, and it's something that I'm really worried about. But no one in Vancouver is talking about that because they still put up their points, right? But when you look at the underlying numbers, I think that's an area of concern for me. A much bigger concern than Kessler's lack of production so far.
The thing that I worry about or wonder about with regard to Daniel is that he still seems to be getting his shots. They're not going in at the rate that they were a year ago. Is he as effective, shooting from the right zones, or what's going on with him? Because he's the guy that of the two that I would wonder most about.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if I have a really good answer for that. Certainly last year, he sort of started sniping, picking corners in a way that he hadn't before. There's a goal against the Los Angeles Kings he scored over Quick, top left corner, and a goal that sealed game 3 against Chicago, where he sort of carried it into the offensive zone and released just a picture-perfect wrist shot. I feel like I haven't seen him beat goalies in that sort of more traditional way on the rush with his shot this year. I don't know that there's anything wrong with that, or if it's just that he hasn't, you know, that will come naturally. But a lot of his goals so far seem to be, you know, the results, like he's slapping it in to open nets on the left side on the power play, especially, or like a shot will be blocked and the Canucks are such good puck movers that someone will get it to him and he'll sort of finish on the open net. That was the opening goal that he scored on Tuesday against Columbus. So, you know, I think there's something there, but I can't really diagnose it. I haven't really looked at it in depth and to look where exactly he's scoring from and where he's getting his chances from. But I do feel like his snipe show on the rush is not there this year like it was last season.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be surprised to see that just come back, and I don't think there's anything in his play that worries me except for, you know, his play in the defensive end.
Now, Vancouver plays at home tomorrow night against the Flames, right?
Yes.
Okay. At this point in their season, they seem to be recovering. I don't think Minnesota is going to hold on to the conference or the division as time rolls on. But is an opponent like Calgary, with the way the Canucks are right now, is that a team that you assume they're going to pick up a W against them? Or are you a little bit concerned about a team that's struggling right now?
You know, you always got to be concerned about a division rival that's struggling. But Calgary plays tonight against Edmonton, right? So the Canucks will get them with 2 days rest after allowing 6 goals to Nashville on Thursday. You know, I think it'll be Luongo's first game back. My guess would be that the team shows up to really sort of ease him back into the lineup and back into the forefront. I don't think I'm worried. The Calgary Flames have been pretty severely dominated by the Canucks over the last 3 years. It's been rare that they've given them a really good game. So, you know, I'd expect the Canucks to win on Sunday. I don't think Calgary will cost me any sleep tonight.
Good. Looking forward to that. I'm going to watch the game, so I'm going to hold you to that. One final one.
Yeah, it should be a fun one.
Yeah, one final one for you. And this is kind of out there, but for Oiler fans, I go online every once in a while, and I'll type in Ryan Nugent Hopkins, and there'll be a really nice article from one of the lower mainland newspapers about the kid from Burnaby. Do people follow him there, or is he an afterthought, or do people have a little bit of pride about the Burnaby kid making good?
Oh, we totally have pride over Ryan Nugent Hopkins. And it's not the first time that we've had a kid from Burnaby, be a really, really big factor for a team in our division. Obviously, Burnaby Joe killed us for years in Colorado,
true.
But we still thought he was the man. And I think with RNH, that's the same way. Going into the draft for 2 years before the draft, I think a lot of Vancouver fans, Canucks fans even, were bragging about him. And when it became apparent that he'd go to the Oilers, we were disappointed. Don't get me wrong. We have no love for the men in copper and blue who've destroyed us for so many years. But nonetheless, yeah, when a local kid plays as well as he has, and he's really running away with the Calder, there's definitely a regionalist sense of pride in that, for sure.
Beautiful. Glenn Anderson was from the West Coast, too, and we always loved it when he would go there. And his parents would cook meals for the Oilers, and then they'd go out and just absolutely bang on the poor Vancouver Canucks in those crazy uniforms. But times have changed. Your team is looking good. I still think you guys are good for the West here. I don't know about the Stanley Cup final, but the hangover is almost done. They seem to be having some good signs are coming out in the last few games, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the Canucks are controlling it when it matters. They're out shooting their opponents pretty severely when the game is tied. And I think that'll show up over the next 2 months. I expect the Canucks to continue their run. They also have a cake schedule for the next 8 games, I believe. Mm-hmm. It's really, I don't think they play a team that anyone would have called a playoff team before the season in the next 8 games. So I expect them to win, 6 of the next 8. And at that point, hopefully Josh Harding's ridiculous save percentage has fallen back to earth, and the Canucks will be sitting pretty atop the Northwest. And, by that point, I think everyone will be pretty calm, and, everyone will just be looking to write about a goalie controversy and create issues out of nothing. But otherwise, I think the Canucks will be pretty steady this year. They've been good so far.
Okay, your Twitter hash is weird, so tell me what it is again.
Yeah, it's Artem Chubarov. He was a favorite of mine growing up, so it's people can follow me there. And you guys should definitely do that. Look for the Embrace the Hate campaign at Canucks Army. We're trying to turn around public perception about Canucks fans league-wide, and especially the idea that Canucks fans are humorless. We've got some really funny people doing some really weird things. In particular, we've invited some of the most notorious Canucks haters to the blog to write about why they hate about our team in a humorous way. And also, we've got some of the best Canucks bloggers defending the most indefensible moments in franchise history. We're also going to look at some of the Canucks fans who are really, really terrible on Twitter and just tweet bile. So that'll be fun. And it's a pretty cool campaign, and all of the proceeds raised from it are going to charity. So check that out at CanucksArmy.com.
Highly creative. Thomas, thank you for this.
All right, all the best. See you, Alex.
Okay. 142, this is Nation Radio. And coming up before the top of the hour, we'll talk to JP Nakota from Leafs Nation. That and more coming up. This is Nation Radio, presented by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 1:47, coming up on 2 o'clock, and Jungle Jim Hunter, the second edition of the show, coming up in just a few minutes from right now, starting at 2 o'clock. Stay tuned for that. Also want to tell you, tomorrow, Ryan Jones will be signing a limited edition This Is Oil Country Edmonton Oilers team calendar. Proceeds of the calendars, which are $5.99, benefit local charities. In addition to meeting Ryan and having him sign a great stocking stuffer, a signed Oiler jersey will be raffled off, and that goes tomorrow afternoon, noon to 2 at Rexall. Ryan will be there between 1 and 2 o'clock at 163rd and 96th Avenue at the Rexall store there in Westgate neighborhood of Edmonton. So, there you go, 1:48, and joined now by J.P. Nakota from Pension Plan Puppets and Leafs Nation. J.P., how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing well, Alan. How about you?
Good. Good news for the Toronto Maple Leafs today. James Reimer going to be in action tonight, right?
Yes, excellent news, excellent news. Previously, Ron Wilson had said that Jonas Gustafsson was going to be the starter and that Reimer was definitely just going to be backing him up, but got some pleasant news, and yeah, I guess he's the starter.
Now, did the Leafs announce it, or was it Reimer's mom?
I do believe he was a Leafs this time. Okay. I'm not sure who was the first to confirm it. I think the first official word I saw was that Reimer himself confirmed it, actually.
You know, and it's interesting because it's not like they're bringing him in against the Sisters of the Poor. The Boston Bruins are the opponent tonight, right?
Yeah. I saw somebody on Twitter earlier comment that, you know, it's a dangerous game to bring him back in, you know, since obviously they're rough competition and also they have Milan Lucic. But to be honest with you, I don't think that Reimer should have to hide from any team. You know, if he's ready, he's ready. If he's not, he's not. So if he's ready for the, you know, Anaheim Ducks, he should be ready for the Boston Bruins as well.
And not to be, you know, a hard ass on this, and I don't mean to be disrespectful, but with Jonas Gustafsson really struggling again this year in the interim, is there a possibility that Scrivens ends up either like later this year or now or next year being the backup, and that the monster ends up elsewhere?
You know, I wouldn't be surprised to see Scrivens wind up with a backup job. However, I don't know if there are many takers for a goalie like Jonas Gustafsson. So the possibility of shipping him out via free agency or via trade seems slim, and they're probably not in any rush to demote him, because then if they ever needed him again, bringing him up through re-entry waivers, they might risk losing him, you know, at half of his salary. So he'll probably stay put for a little while yet. But I would be surprised to see him back next year at all.
You know, I've been following your scoring chances on the Leafs Nation, and it's fascinating to me because, you know, in watching the Leafs as I do, really, Kessel and Lupul, that line just seems to be absolute lights out. And I've been impressed at times with Tyler Bozak, who's played well as well. But some of the games that recently, and I'm thinking of the one against the Stars, it really didn't look like that at even strength anyway. Oh, we appear to have lost him. That's not cool, but we'll get him back. J.P. Nakota, talking about the Leafs and scoring chances, the Lupul and Bozak line, along with Kessel, have really, you know, for the most part, played very well together. But in the most recent one, the Stars game, there was definitely some difficulty in that 4-3 shootout win for the Leafs. They definitely seemed to not be able to rely on that line, and it's too bad. Too, because you know, with the young centerman, I mean, kind of cheering for him because came out of college, Bozak did, and a Western boy, and an opportunity for him to really play well. We were in conversation with JP talking about the Boston game and the scoring that he's been doing. So let's get back to that, the Dallas scoring that you did, the Kessel Lupul and combination along with Bozak. They were really exposed in that game.
Yeah, they were, which is somewhat surprising because really those have been our leaders in chances for and in terms of chance differential throughout the season. But, you know, I guess the Stars found a solution for them. I'm not sure what specifically they were doing differently there, but I would look to see teams starting to adjust more and more to the potency of that line. And, you know, eventually to see a switch up in the centers, probably see Connolly back with Kessel in a short while.
I keep expecting Kuhlman. Kuhlman is the one Leaf that I really enjoy watching. I really like his style of play. Not that I don't like the other guys, but he's a really fine player. A little difficult for him this year. Is he starting to recover?
You know what? Yeah, I think having the benefit of a full training camp and off season to prepare was really big for him. And hey, playing with Phil Kessel, you know, that's not going to hurt your stats either.
Yeah, Randy Carlyle released by Anaheim, and he's a guy with definite Toronto connections. I can always count on Toronto media to start some kind of rumor. Anything swirling with regard to Carlyle and Wilson's future with him not having a contract beyond this year?
You know, all indications are right now that Ron Wilson's job is safe for the moment. I spoke with James Myrtle recently about that, and given that the Leafs look to be in such good playoff position for the moment, there's no talk of canning Wilson. But, you know, stay tuned if their luck starts to run up.
So, and final question, and this is one I saved for last because I started the edition of Nation Radio today on it. Brian Burke and his barn raising with Kevin Lowe, is that getting a lot of play in Toronto, and what's the reaction?
Well, Brian Burke being a pretty colorful character, I think probably has a certain, you might say a certain following that probably really enjoys that kind of story, really enjoys that kind of character. I would say that's getting a fair bit of attention. It's a great little anecdote. It's probably for the best it didn't pan out for them, though.
Hey, JP, thanks very much.
All right, thanks, Alan.
Okay, JP Nakoda from Leafs Nation, and we also want to thank Jason Greger, of course, from Team 1260, Dean Belanger as well from Jets Nation, Kent Wilson from Flames Nation, and Thomas Grant from Canucks Army as well. Very busy show. Thanks so much, and thanks to Connor Halley, who is my producer, a little under the weather, but he did a fine job today. And stay tuned for edition number 2 of the Jungle Jim Hunter Show right here on Team 1260. Have a great weekend, everyone. We'll see you next Saturday, high noon, for Nation Radio.